ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Solaria Report. This is John Titus and Catherine Austin Fitz. And with Money and Markets, it's February 15th recording time. We're publishing tomorrow, February 16th. And I'm just going to start and open up. You've got a new video coming out today.
Yeah, I do. Coming out.
Yeah.
A couple hours after. Actually, right when we wind this up, I did the time release on YouTube. It'll come out at noon Eastern time on the 16th.
Yeah. Something juicy to look forward to.
15th. Yeah, we'll get to that later.
I have to plug it. Okay, so our theme today is?
It's a bird, it's a plane, it's a distraction.
Action.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an honor of, I've never seen as many distractions as
there were
this last week. It was a lot. It's just
but then again, there's the distractions mirror or are designed to cover the reality, and there's a lot of news to be covered up.
Yeah. My favorite one on the balloon shootdowns was one ally said to me, why do they want to drop soldiers into these different areas?
Oh, my God.
And I thought, well, that's a good question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is a good question.
That is a good question. Okay, let's dive in.
Let's get it on. Let's start with the war in the Ukraine. In this first one, Wall Street Journal, Moldova's pro-Western government collapses as fallout from Ukraine war worsens. Now, I'd be the first to admit my geography is a little weak, but there's some signs in this article. I'm like, what? Are you sure about that?
Eastern Europe is not enthusiastic about the Ukraine war.
I don't think so. Okay, so let's look at this article. Moldova's pro-Western government resigned amid the worsening economic fallout from the war in neighboring Ukraine. Okay? The problem there, the prime minister, Natalia, I'm not even going to try to go with that last name, Natalia G, her government faced challenges. Since the Russian invasion began nearly a year ago, inflation has soared in the former Soviet Republic, peaking at 30% in December after, they got this here. They got to let you know Moscow's decision to throttle natural gas supplies. Okay. Moldova has suffered power cuts after Russian attacks on the electrical grid in Ukraine. And I'm like, what? I don't remember seeing Moldova in any of these conversations about the war in Ukraine until now. But let's go on. Moldova and Romanian defense ministries said Russia had launched a cruise missile from a warship in the Black Sea, steering it through Moldovan airspace en route to a target in Ukraine, adding to fears that the war could spill over Ukraine's borders. And I'm like, okay, now I'm pretty sure that's messed up. So let's look at a map. And here we go. Let me get out of Zoom and hit.
It's theoretically possible because...
Well, let's take a look, okay? Because this is... Okay. Here is Moldova, okay? It is on the western part of Ukraine. Here's Russia over here.
Right.
The war is kind of here, okay? Or here. So for Russia to launch a missile from the Black Sea going over Moldova, what do they do? Was it a bank shot? I mean,
right.
What are we talking about?
Right.
And really the electrical grid, electrical grids tend to be, there's no electrical grid over the entirety of Ukraine. You don't just black out, hit the substation here and black out the whole country. That's not how that works. It's a grid. So it's kind of localized.
Right, but let's face it, Moldova's problem is the central bank policies.
Yeah,
Moldova. That's what's causing inflation.
Right, Moldova's problem is the central bank problems.
Right, but you got to blame it on Putin, right?
But you got to blame it on Putin.
And the proof that it's Putin's fault is that a missile veered through Moldova airspace, maybe.
Yeah, but they led with their chin when they said, the natural gas, Putin's weaponizing natural gas. Like, well, you guys were trying to cap the price of his goods.
Right.
If memory serves. And you were sanctioning him and stealing his money. And he said, fine, you can pay your gas bill in rubles. How about that? So that whole story, the West is not, the West is cranky about how the war is going. It's not going well.
Well, but let's look what happened. The government is suffering from the inflation being driven mostly, primarily probably by the central banks.
Yeah.
But the population is also sick of the lies of the West.
Yeah.
And they're getting cranky about supporting leadership that's trying to stuff those lies down their face. They're just getting tired of it. People want to be productive and they want to deal with reality and they don't have time for this. And they're just tired of the shriek-o-meter, and they're tired of being lied to, and they're tired of having to waste their energy supporting official narrative that's not true.
Right. I'll tell you what else they're tired of. They're tired of not having gas.
Right.
Well, let's go to the big story this week.
Right.
Okay. This is Seymour Hersh. I think everybody kind of knows about this, how America took out the Nord Stream pipeline. And there's a lot in this story, but I just want to get into this here. Continue reading. There we go. This is the key paragraph to me. Last June, Navy divers operating under cover of widely publicized midsummer NATO exercises planted the remotely triggered explosives that, 3 months later, destroyed three of the four Nord Stream pipelines. And this is where we need to talk about, according to a source with direct knowledge of the operational planning. So this entire piece by Hersh is, we don't know who the source is. He doesn't say who that source is. So
but the challenge for the Navy is that the majority of people who read that will believe that Seymour Hersh is trustworthy on that point. Right.
I'm not disputing that. What I'm raising is, is this damage control? Since the whole world knows who blew that up. Biden told him in advance.
Right.
Victoria Nuland told him in advance or right at the time of, hey, great. We got them, whatever. There are any number of indications that the U.S. did this, admissions that the U.S. did this. And the question is whether Hersh's piece is true insofar as it goes, but there might be a lot more because we don't know who that source is.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I do think it's going to make it more uncomfortable for a whole group of European leaders.
Yeah. Boy, no question about that.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the U.S. is the bad guy there. And like you say, people are tired. They're tired of the lies. They're tired of the shriek-o-meter, and they're tired of not having the gas on.
Right.
They
don't see the benefit of being in the U.S. syndicate anymore.
What's the benefit? What's the upside, guys?
They're not seeing it.
Meanwhile, the rubles outrun the dollar.
Right.
Your sanctions didn't work. You told us the sanctions are going to cripple this economy, and it didn't. So not going well for the empire over there.
I would say the West looks a lot less attractive to be a part of.
Not looking good. Yeah.
Right.
Right. And now you have, Moldova. This is creeping outward. The truth will out. And I think we're starting to see really after a year, it's coming out.
Right. But I get back to the story of I'm good. Many people will go along with the official narrative as long as they get their check. Inflation takes away their check. And when you take away their check, they stop going along with the official narrative. It's just how it is.
Another great point. Yep.
Right.
We're tired of this,
Right.
Okay, let's keep it going with space military global turf wars. This is just a map of Europe's biggest sources of electricity by country. I found this really interesting.
Isn't this interesting?
Because if you just kind of look at this color scheme quickly, just scan it, the real dark ones are the bad guys. According to the ESG people, the friendly lighter colors, it's not a very subtle color scheme. But anyway, if you scroll down here to these countries and see, do you see much that deep red?
Nope.
I see Cyprus, and that's it. And then you got.
It's basically gas and nuclear and gas are the workhorses, and then coal.
Yeah, so, and then coal.
Yeah.
Right. Right. That is a very, very interesting map. So, you look at wind.
It's tiny.
Well, there's Spain.
Right.
Yeah. But I don't see any other 13% in solar. I don't see any.
Well, Denmark, you've got Denmark.
Solar didn't even earn a slot in the color scheme up top, the color key. It's only down here you see solar. Denmark?
Yeah, Denmark is wind.
Oh, but not solar.
Yeah, and Denmark has a, is leading the effort on putting the windmills up in the North Sea. So they're planning on turning the North Sea, basically Denmark to the UK into a big windmill juggernaut. And if you read their stories about it, it's basically they want that area to power the control grid. So you're going to kill your fishing and the ocean and the environment in exchange for building a control grid in Northern Europe.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, we'll come back to coal. Coal figures in a later story. But the push for green is on big time. I mean, we're going to
see that. Right, but if you look at the numbers, it's tiny, and it's going to stay tiny in terms of percentage.
Yeah, that's the thing. And the powers that be keep pushing green, 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 green. It's like, well, you can't conjure electricity from a keyboard. You know that, right?
Right.
No amount of telling lies is going to power people's homes.
Well, but the other thing is the control grid is unbelievably energy expensive. So this notion about green is ridiculous. It's the opposite.
It's expensive, huh?
Right. The metaverse is expensive.
Yeah, right. 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 How about crypto?
Right. You know?
Okay. Let's turn to FedWatch. This first story is really interesting. Treasury. This is a sign of internal stress. Treasury warns that cloud computing poses risk to financial sector. It's like, huh? It did what? So this is Wall Street Journal. Financial institutions, Treasury Department was warning about this. Financial institutions relying on a small number of providers for cloud computing services. According to the Treasury, that's a problem. My highlighting went away on me. Okay. It said banks are increasingly using remote computing services such as clouds. And then when you get down to the small number of companies, here you go. It's Amazon, Microsoft, and basically Google.
It's the U.S. government's three largest cloud contractors.
Yeah. Meaning a technical breakdown or cyber attack on one of those companies could have broad consequences. So then there's another interesting thing in here.
Now, you realize this is right after the DOD just issued a $10 billion contract to those three firms.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're warning that the financial services are going to be in the same cloud contracts with the DOD. Maybe they're worried the DOD will hack the banks and take them over.
Yeah. That's the question is what's going on with these? Why this warning? Why would you do that? They award these contracts.
I mean, Amazon is running the cloud contract for the 17 U.S. intelligence agencies through the CIA, plus a cloud contract with the Navy, plus one-fourth of the cloud contract, the $10 billion cloud contract for DOD. Hello?
Yeah, right.
Hello?
one of the things that crossed my mind reading that article is, are they sort of preconditioning people for a cyber attack.
Well, you think that's the number one.
We'll get to that too. Yeah. That's my
Who's the
horse.
Leader in the poly crisis?
Well, yeah, right. I mean, right. The favorite in the race is undoubtedly environmental in nature.
Right.
But they have a lot of entries. There's a lot of, in a horse race, you have alternate entries.
Right.
There's five this time. They have
a lot of entries. They're clearly not in the depending field. On anyone. They want plenty in the toolkit. Right.
Right. Right. They got a lot they can fall back on there. But what I haven't seen with that, we'll talk about it, but they haven't really done any drills that I know of on environmental. Remember how we had Event 201 before the pandemic?
They haven't done any drills on any of the environmental hazards we're having now.
Right.
Let alone they've done a serious nuclear meltdown.
But they have done drills on cyber attack.
Yes.
Multiple times.
Yes.
Okay, but we'll get to that. So let's keep it going in FedWatch with the next almost amusing article from Fortune. Markets rally on dovish Powell remarks as he thinks that the disinflationary process has started. Chair Jerome Powell said at a news conference that the Fed recognizes the pace of inflation has cooled, a signal that it could be nearing the end of its rate increases. The stock and bond markets rallied during his news conference, suggesting that they anticipated a forthcoming pause in the Fed's tightening. Notice the date of this article. It is February 2nd, 2023. I bring that up because right as Powell is saying, oh, yeah, inflation's going away, we have huge CPI revisions come out. This is an article from Mish, and he points out that on Friday, February 10th, the BLS quietly revised the consumer price index higher for four of the past 5 months, with only 1 month unchanged.
These guys are not even subtle.
No, it's blatant. You know, it's totally blatant what they do.
Right.
You know, he comes like, oh, the inflation's going away. And then, you know, they turn around. Treasury turns around to the Bureau of Labor Statistics and revises the projections from previous months and says, oh, yeah, by the way, inflation was a lot higher than we told you about. You know, meanwhile, okay, with these interest rate increases from the Fed, we see this. This is a daily double from Mish, by the way, a first of two daily doubles. The annual interest rate payment on government debt due to the interest rate increases is $850 billion and rising fast. And the reason I chose this story is this graph. I mean, will you get a load of this?
Yeah.
Look at that.
And it's approaching, because the deficit is growing faster than was projected, it's now approaching $900 billion.
Well, I have it kind of the other way around, but yeah. So let's cut to that. But that's a huge interest payment from where it was a year ago.
Well, the average weighted maturity of the outstanding debt is about 5 years, which is short, and it's much shorter than it used to be. Which means, as it's rolling in over, you know, because it reflected interest rates coming down almost to zero. Mm-hmm. So now you've not only do you have the debt on the rate on your existing debt that you're rolling over, but as you the deficits add more debt, then that's coming out at a higher interest rates. So your total interest payments are going to rise quickly.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Right. You got that right. But the weighted average keeps moving forward in time into higher and higher rates.
Right.
Exactly right. Bonds roll off. They get renewed at a higher interest rate.
So in 5 years, your interest rate payments are much, much higher. Right.
World of hurt. Exactly. Right. But right now, we're feeling it right now. Look at this. Like you said, U.S. budget deficit widens rapidly, threatening debt limit timeline. Now, my highlighting went on me because my computer shut down minutes before we started, but I remember this. Okay, so right now they're saying excess of spending over receipts totaled $459 billion for the first 4 months. That's a $200 billion increase over the same period last year. But there's a footnote on this figure, $459 billion. You get down here and they tell you, where is it? That figure is not, there's, here we go. The CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, said that if it hadn't been for calendar-driven shifts in certain payments, in other words, for accounting gimmicks, the federal deficit would have been $522 billion for that period.
Wow.
Double the earlier shortfall. So they're trying to spin it, you know, as best they can in the top of this article, and you get down and you find out it's even worse than they,
right.
In the best case starts with things. It's not good.
No.
You know, deficit spiraling out of control.
No, but if you look at what they're doing with spending bills, it's like money is no object. They're spending, I mean, they're pumping out a tsunami of money.
Yeah, right. They're pumping out a tsunami of money.
Right.
Right. And anyway, we'll see where this goes. I mean, the Treasury, for the last two annual reports, which, by the way, come out about this time of year, last two annual reports of the Treasury, they've said, listen, we're on a fiscally unsustainable path. And what they're talking about exactly that, right? That your spending is way past your GDP, okay? And it's going to be like multiples of it.
The three things you can cut. You can cut interest on the debt, but then you can't borrow more. You can cut military spending, but then you can't borrow more. Somebody's got to force everybody to take that debt. But the third thing you can do is you can cut entitlements. I just saw a headline. I didn't get a chance to read it. 32 states cutting back food stamps, money for food stamps.
Oh, that's scary.
Right. Now, last time I looked, J.P. Morgan Chase ran 37 state programs. So
that's been a while. That's changed.
Has do you know how many they run?
I can't. No, I don't know. But okay. That was
in the financial crisis.
They got
2007, 2008. They were running 37 of the states.
They were running. They're running that as late as 2013 and 14. But I think that was about the time they started getting out of that business.
Okay.
You know, it was a hot political. They were taking heat on it.
Yep.
Not from the mainstream media, but from media sources around the world, like RT and Al Jazeera were like, "Hey, you know."
Well, they were outsourcing all the jobs to India while people in America didn't have jobs.
It was not a good look for J.P. Morgan.
No.
And it's a smart company, at least insofar as, you know, not doing stupid things like that. They got out. They started easing out of it. Okay. Okay, let's go to FedWatch, other forms of control. And this is what I'm talking about. This is when I said they're trying to sell ESG like crazy. Here's The Economist. War and subsidies have turbocharged the green transition. Oh, really? Now, The Economist says they may have knocked as much as 10 years off the timeline. In other words, we're going to green a lot faster than we thought. So they start this article. I'm going to kind of try to distill it down here. The global energy crisis is a nightmare. In their panic to keep the lights on, policymakers across Europe and Asia are, horror of horrors, reopening coal mines. Right? Reopening coal mines. But The Economist says, you know, don't worry. Our findings suggest that the crunch caused by the war in Ukraine may, in fact, contrary to your expectations, it may have fast-tracked the green transition by an astonishing 5 to 10 years. And it's like, well, you're reopening coal mines? How is that helping? And they get in here and they say, well, the IEA, an international forecaster, predicts coal demand will remain high until 2025. And then it says, it comes out and says, it cautions that soothsaying is really hard. Okay? But it's going to remain high until 2025, but soothsaying is really hard. But then they go on and immediately say, but beyond 2025, coal's fortunes look dim. Interesting. Why is that? You never find out. Like, why you reopen the coal mines, that wasn't a problem. And then they show you this graph here. This is interesting. This is coal, and you can see it's right here. This is as they're reopening mines, okay, throughout Europe. Okay, so the coal's coming back. Why don't you just keep reopening mines? They don't really explain that. They go on and say the world's existing production capacity of both oil and gas is already close to being fully used. They don't say that about coal. Russia cannot easily redirect gas export. Its oil rigs, lacking people and parts, may soon produce less than they do now.
Uh-huh.
And they never tell you, well, why don't you just, what's the problem with coal? They just conclude, like, hey, you know what? And this all this means, ta-da, 5 to 10 years ahead of schedule with green. Like,
well, but remember when Van der Leyen became the head of the EU and she laid out this huge green program but couldn't get any money for it?
Yeah.
You know, what she said after the pandemic is the pandemic was great because now we got all the money for the green program.
Yeah.
So right. You know, whether and we still don't know where the money going to the war in Ukraine is going. So there is no doubt that and it's not for green. It's for building the control grid. So.
Right.
I just did an interview with Arno Wellens, which we'll publish next week, where he said, you know, the CBDC agenda has been really kickstarted by the money they were able to pour into building the control grid. So when you see green, I hear control grid.
Right.
Right.
I think that's, you know, it took me a while to come to that. I think that's exactly right.
Right.
You know, I went to law school.
They need everybody on electricity, right? So if you're running around in a car with oil and gas, you can be independent. But if you're running around an electrical car, they got you under control.
They got you under control.
And if you look at how energy inefficient the control grid is, I mean, crypto is not energy efficient. CBDC is not energy efficient. So it's hugely more energy wasteful than the, than other things we could be doing. So it's got nothing to do with climate change. It's got nothing to do with green. It's got to do with control. Green is just a way of marketing control. Climate change is just a way of marketing control.
Right.
I mean,
if
I came to John Titus as a 25-year-old, let's say John Titus in college.
Let's say John Titus in grad school, because I was in grad school in 91 getting a master's degree, and we did an exercise in which we discovered that even if you solar panel the whole U.S., you get between a quarter and a third of our energy requirement.
Right, but let's say you're not as smart as you and your professors were. That probably was electrical engineering, right? Or was it law school? Okay.
But
imagine you're young, you don't know. How are they going to sell slavery to you? How are they going to sell the control grid to you? They've got to make it green and good for the environment.
Put on a happy face.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's like everybody loves the planet, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
That's.
Oh, okay. Boy.
I forget if we have the Hillary. Do we have the Hillary Clinton story in today?
No.
Yeah, Hillary Clinton saying we had to outlaw cash in the United States because of climate change.
I don't remember seeing that.
Really? I sent that to you. You've repressed it.
I've repressed it. Right. It may be in the queue for the next money markets, though.
She was in India announcing a Clinton Foundation financing of a fund to help women adapt to climate change. More control and slavery is good for women.
All these people, Clinton, Fauci, Bill Gates, Soros, Warren Buffett, Even ABC News, like this week with David Brinkley, that whole crew has been around since 83. Just all of them. Like, when are you going to go away? Please. Okay. Let's keep it going. With more FedWatch, other forms of control. This from Daily Mail. Edinburgh becomes the first European capital to commit to taking meat off the menu in schools in a bid to reduce the carbon footprint. But notice, it is not just schools. It is also hospitals and nursing homes. Let's cut everyone's protein. You need to get healthy. That's too bad. We want to cut your protein. Now, why does this matter if you're an American? Well, here you go. Because Edinburgh is the second place in the UK to adopt this is according to a treaty for health. I forget what the name of the treaty is. Where is it up here? The city has voted to adopt a plant-based treaty, including a pledge to promote vegan food over animal products. And then you go down here and you say it's the second in the UK to adopt the treaty, but it's one of 20 worldwide cities to do this, including, ta-da, Los Angeles. Of course it's Los Angeles. Of course. Surprised it's not San Francisco. But this is
I don't think the
treaty.
Folks in Hollywood are going to give up their steaks. Do you? That's not happening.
LA is the second largest town in the U.S. I don't see 50% of the population going with that. No, I don't.
Yeah, not in Beverly Hills. That's not happening.
No, I don't.
Prime Minister of Scotland just resigned. The headline was, reaction to her woke agenda. So.
Oh.
Yeah, I wonder how many of those were Edinburgh parents who'd had it.
Whoa. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't see that. Okay. That's great news. I love hearing that. That makes my day.
I know. That is good news.
Oh, man. Okay. Let's keep it going. This next story was odd, but I wanted to put it in here. This is just sort of a woman's account Very interesting story here. I thought I was saving trans kids, but now I'm blowing the whistle. And she leads off with, I'm a 42-year-old St. Louis native, a queer woman, and politically to the left of Bernie Sanders. My worldview has deeply shaped my career. I spent my whole career helping, vulnerable populations, children in foster care, sexual minorities, and the poor. And then she starts a job in 2018 as a case manager for the Washington University Transgender Center at St. Louis University Hospital. Now here, my highlighting is gone, so I'm going to kind of tell you what the story is, distill it down as best I can quickly. Basically, she says, I started to notice in 2015, there was a big shift in gender makeup of people coming in. And I started to see way more girls come in. Like it went from, let's say that the previous number was 10.
Right.
The new number was something like 70. And he said, I had groups of girls coming in from the same schools. And she says, and the problem is that they basically only had to it was almost like one-stop shopping at this clinic where they could go see one doctor, tell them what the problem was, and they would get prescribed hormones. And she says the hormone treatments are basically irreversible. They just start right away. They're growing beards. They become sexually very aggressive, very masculine characteristics. And it ruins people's lives as they get older.
Right.
But the reason I wanted to put it in is it's a firsthand account from someone who is inclined, she saw at the outset, she's politically inclined to kind of go with this. And she's like, wait a minute, we need to pump the brakes on this. Something is way wrong.
Right. Because it's you have kids who are being sort of lobbied in ways I would describe as even covert. You have them making irreversible decisions without any kind of context, training, background, supervision, and their parents are responsible for them, but they get no say in the decision in many cases. So it's the same with injections or any of these other things that are done without informed and parental consent. The parent is legally and financially responsible, but they have no authority or power. It's frightening.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Right. The parents are totally out of the equation.
Right. If you look at my understanding of how many of these irreversible decisions are later regretted, it's an extraordinary number. So, this doesn't take – you really get the feeling that these kids are being experimented on, that they're being recruited to be experimented on, and it's a giant experiment.
That's why I flagged the part about she's saying, I'm getting groups of girls coming from the same school.
Right.
Like, hello, what is going on in these schools?
So I would recommend I did a book review several years ago, the best book on this topic I know, called Irreversible Damage. And if you have a teenage daughter, you should read it. And because you have got to protect your children again, from this, because it is really dangerous.
Wow. So, that's just horrifying.
Yep.
The irreversibility reminds me of the conversation we were having last week about Google, and the destruction of statues in the US. Like, who are you to advocate the destruction of a statue, which is an irreversible decision? That's part of our history. And you don't like it, and you have the right to make a decision that affects all of eternity?
One of the things that's going to come up, it's just started. It started with the Twitter testimony last week. I think it was last week or the week before. Manipulation of information that leads to irreversible damage, disability, or death. We're just starting to appreciate how much harm is being done by manipulation or censorship of information, and this is one area where it's going to come out in spades.
Yeah,
yeah,
right. And what happens when it does?
So one of the things I just want to say, I'm going to beat this drum, is if you give the number one recommendation in irreversible damage by this attorney who, went through the whole topic in detail and wrote an excellent book. She says her number one recommendation is do not give your children a smartphone. Do not give your children. And what I'll say is, Spectre and James Bond, you're basically giving unfettered access by transnational organized crime to your children 24/7, to their unconscious thoughts, to their minds, to their physical bodies, It's insane.
Right.
Don't do it. Just don't do it.
We'll get to a piece later by Rappaport that will really drive that point home.
Right. Right.
Very interesting. But for now, let's keep it going with Fed Watch, other forms of control. This from the ABA, I did not know this, I gotta tell you. ABA presses Supreme Court to adopt ethics rules. I'm like, what is going on here? The ABA's American Bar Association's policymaking body passed a resolution urging the court to put in place a binding ethics code similar to the Judicial Conference of the United States Code of Conduct, with which I am familiar. That code lays out rules for the rest of the country's federal judges regarding extrajudicial activities, financial matters, and other conduct. So that code, I know about it because federal judges, let me back up. The federal judiciary right now, it's probably about 850, 900 members, meaning federal district court judges, Article III judges, right. Appeals court judges, and nine Supreme Court justices. I thought all of them had to do what the federal district court judges do and the appeals court judges do, which is file financial disclosure forms every year where you can look at their holdings, their investments.
So the Supreme Court doesn't have to file any disclosure?
No. They just said that code doesn't apply to the nine justices. And the ABA is saying, hey, you got to get on board with this because, look at right now, the ABA is kind of taking advantage here. Public confidence in the Supreme Court is declining. A Reuters poll found that 57% of Americans had an unfavorable view of the court as of last June, and consequently, Democrats introduced a bill calling for the Supreme Court to issue a code of conduct for its nine justices that would require judges and their law clerks to disclose all gifts, reimbursements, and income they receive, as well as boast a recusal standard. The bill has not been yet enacted. But that I didn't know.
I did not know that. I thought they had to disclose.
That's what I thought. Evidently not. Wow. Learn something new every day in my own profession.
Is there anybody in Washington who doesn't have an offshore account?
Yeah. Is there anybody in Washington without an offshore account? Without an undisclosed offshore account at that.
Right. Right.
You know?
Right.
Okay, let's go to the next story. This is a bad one. Ohio train derailment prompts water utility across state lines to take precautions as health concerns mount. You killed my highlighting, but I'm going to get it back. Watch this. So this train derails, but the story really, the train derailed, but the real story is that there's a burn off of chemicals with this train derailment.
But didn't they make the decision to do the burn off, intentionally do the burn off?
Let's look at it. Okay.
Yeah.
Train derailment in Ohio. This is in Palestine, Ohio. I'll get to that in a minute. They spewed out boiling gas, prompting officials to then burn vinyl chloride in five tanker cars in an attempt to dispose of the toxic chemical in a controlled setting. And it's prompted a water utility as far away as West Virginia to take added precautions as health concerns mount. Now, that's pretty far away because this place in Ohio is kind of the western part of the state. And you go down, they say, and there's already arguments over this, the derailment investigators say was caused by a broken axle. Authorities decided there's a dispute over what the cause is, which is a big red flag to me.
Right.
Authorities decided to release and burn vinyl chloride inside five tanker cars, sending hydrogen chloride and the toxic gas phosgene into the air. The move was meant to get rid of highly flammable toxic chemicals in a controlled environment and created a dark plume of smoke, which everybody has seen. Environmental regulators have been monitoring the air and water in surrounding communities and have said that so far, air quality remains safe and drinking supplies have not been affected. Okay. Let's go to a video that was from local news in Ohio and check out and see how safe the air really is. Okay, here we go.
So I walked up to the cage and this is what I found.
Amanda Brashears was going to feed her five hens and rooster this morning when she discovered them all lifeless, practically in the same position with no signs of a predator entering their enclosure.
I'm beyond upset and quite panicked. because this, they may be just chickens, but they're family.
Brashear says her chickens were alive and well yesterday. She believes the smell following the detonation of the train carrying chemicals that derailed in East Palestine is to blame for her birds' sudden death.
My video camera footage shows my chickens were perfectly fine before they started this burn. And as soon as they started the burn, my chickens slowed down and they died. If it can do this to chickens in one night, imagine what it's going to do to us in 20 years.
Okay, notice in this lower third here, North Lima, okay? That's a long, that's 75 miles away. That's 75 miles away.
75 miles away, wow.
Yeah, I used to drive through North
Lima. Well,
North
if you
Lima.
Look at a plume that big, it can easily go that far, especially if there's wind.
I used to drive through North Lima when I was going from Indiana to North Carolina. And so I know that area, and I'm like, I don't remember East Palestine. I've never heard of that. So I looked it up on a map, and it's 75 miles away. Whoa, you're telling me a day later it kills all these chickens 75 miles away and the air's safe? I'll tell you the environmental regulators are lying through their teeth.
Right. Has to be.
There's not two ways about that. I mean, you're telling...
Well, it's interesting because I checked Norfolk Southern stock and it was off about 5%. Now, I don't know what their insurance obligations are. I don't know who's ultimately going to eat the cost. But it looks like it's a lot worse than the market is anticipating it is.
Look, it certainly looks a lot worse than the environmental regulators are telling you about.
Right.
Yeah.
This is one of the jurisdictional risks that's the most frightening because what I've always said is, if the collapse is not going to be a global collapse, it's going to be a derailment of toxins in your area that wipes out the value. You know, your home goes from being worth $250,000 to being worth nothing. Boom. Right. Can't live there. Got to leave. Right.
Yeah, you've been banging that drum since way before you and I ever spoke.
Well, it was really funny because when I won the litigation, I got a huge chunk of change. And when I got the huge chunk of change, I bought a house for $60,000. Now, when I lived in New York, that was the price of a really nice chair, right?
Right.
In fact, one of the Park Avenue magazines once had an antique chair on its cover, and it said, for the price of a small house, you can own this chair. But I bought a tiny country house on an acre of land. I spent about, $60,000 fixing it up and making it resilient with generator and new roof and all that kind of stuff. But I wanted something that was as low cost as possible because I knew in this environment where you can't trust any of the safety regulators, you can have to pick up and go. I mean, I lived in Washington in a beautiful mansion. I had low-grade biological warfare, electromagnetic harassment, people breaking in, people following me, leaving dead rats on the doorstep. So what is? I had $1 million-plus mansion. I spent $35,000 on a security system, and then I just had to go on the run. I hired the attorney who wrote the asset forfeiture fund legislation for the Department of Justice to keep them from seizing my house or the proceeds of my house when I sold it.
Wow. That's a lot of money to live in a bad neighborhood.
Right, exactly. And if you don't have the fundamental infrastructure of civilization, you got to be prepared to get up and move. Because this is either sabotage. I mean, it could be sabotage. It's either sabotage or it's Atlas Shrugged.
Yeah, you saw that story. It says it's a broken axle. Now people are like, oh, no, it's a weight bearing. It's a bearing in the wheel.
It could be that the tracks are not being properly maintained.
Could be.
Right. Could be. So we don't know what it is. But in a system that's run with excellent management and leadership, that doesn't happen.
Right. You see the clowns we have in the leadership structure. It's not confidence inspiring at all.
A lot of U.S. operations are so much more focused on you know, financial engineering to get the stock up and another penny to the shareholders.
Yeah.
And the fundamental operations are being systematically drained.
Yeah. So anything to get that share price up.
Well, but think about it. If you think of all the employees in that system in Norfolk and Southern, if they were forced or pressured to take the vaccination, and if now they're dealing with the same percentages of disability and death that, you know, you're seeing in the Skidmore survey or Denny Rancor study or any of these other studies, your morale is not so great.
Right.
So, right.
Yeah. So it's a slow burn, you know?
Right.
And sometimes it's not so slow. Suddenly is a very popular word these days.
Well, here's the thing. If you look at the Atlas Shrugged scenario, whether it's the water in Flint or the water in the county next to Scottsdale, you know, losing your water or getting a train derailment, all these different kinds of implosions, you know, they're just going to be happening more and more and more. So
yeah,
I told you, we did a great interview with the Strongtown's head, Chuck Marone, and he talked about how much property tax was required to keep up all of the different infrastructure having been built with federal grants. So
really?
In Lafayette, Louisiana, the average tax, property tax, was $1,200 a year. But to simply maintain all the stuff federal grants had built would require upping the property tax to $8,200 a year. Right. And what he said is all over the United States, you're going to have municipalities all over the United States who are just going to have to let go of the infrastructure because there is not enough private economy to pay the taxes to cover everything. Now,
yeah, I don't think letting go of the infrastructure is the plan there. I think seizure of the houses might be the plan.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, we get back to why does central control want total central control? Because they've built an economic model that now has to reset. And the question is, if they want to stay the winner in the reset, they need total control.
Right. And that's one way to do it is you can really, it's nearly impossible in the U.S. to own your house. I mean, the bottom line is you're a renter in this country. You're sold on the notion of ownership. You don't own your house. Try not paying your taxes for a year. See what happens to your house. See who owns your house after a year not paying taxes, renter.
Right. But I do own 3 properties, right, in Hickory Valley, Tennessee. And my combined city and county property taxes, you want to guess what they are? So I have 2 properties, each one's on an acre, one's on a little bit less than an acre.
City and county?
City and county, my total property tax is city and county for the 3 properties.
$1,500.
$500.
Wow.
Right. Wow. Now you know why I bought a home in Hickory Valley, Tennessee.
Now I get it. I get it.
Inflation resistance.
I mean, Indiana's, you know, I was in rural Indiana. It was way north of that.
Right.
Oh, okay.
A lot of Scottish people settled in Tennessee.
Okay. Good to know.
Yeah.
All right, let's keep it going. Let's get into the world of crypto. I got 2 stories this week, really sort of tiles in the mosaic. You know, I think you and I agree that it's going to be a while for CBDC. But that does not mean that the powers that be aren't busy little beavers. They most certainly are, as we're going to see from the next 2 stories. First story, National Australia Bank. And that bank, but that's not the central bank. The central bank is the Royal Bank of Australia.
Right.
National Australia Bank is really, it's kind of like Bank of America.
Right. And it's one of the, they have a very consolidated banking system. It's one of the big 5. Right.
It's one of the big 5. Exactly. It's third largest in deposits, probably just like Bank of America is here. So think Bank of America when you hear the story. National Australia Bank to launch stablecoin on Ethereum network, Algorand blockchain. Okay. So what's going on? This bank has created its own stablecoin, AUDN. It will allow its customers to settle transactions using blockchain technology in real time using Australian dollars. It will be set up on the Ethereum network and Algorand blockchain. NAB stablecoin is fully backed 1-for-1 by Australian dollars. apart from using the stablecoin for daily transactions, and this is kind of very interesting to me, in cross-border remittances, that's the main purpose.
Right.
The executive from the bank revealed that it could also be used in bond market repurchase agreements and for green deposits.
What's a green deposit?
It's a good question. I don't really know. I know that NAV is a team player, though, with the ESG model.
So here's my question. If I have a digital dollar in my Australian bank account, I mean, that's what you and I have now. If I have a dollar in the bank,
right.
It's a digital dollar, right?
Right, right.
So why would I convert my digital dollar into a stable coin when I can just transfer my digital dollar? Now, the one reason to do it is for cross-border payments.
Instantaneous settlement. Instantaneous settlement. That's what they're saying.
That's true.
That's sort of the premise of this whole thing is you get all these, you know, again, the aroma of sales job is rather overpowering. It's sort of like, oh, we're doing this for your convenience. Like, you're not doing this for my convenience. You don't give a damn about my convenience. You're doing this for you. You're selling me on the notion of instantaneous settlement, but you're really up to something else.
Yeah, but if you look at how instantaneous or almost instantaneous many of the other digital systems are, I still don't get it. You know, yeah. I think they're trying to build the train tracks. That's it.
Of course they are.
Right.
Of course they are. The sales pitch is, oh, well, you know, by instantaneous settlement, you save all this money. But when you really drill into it, it's not that much money.
Right.
You know, it's like, well, why are you print money? You really worried about money? You print the money.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, but the writing is on the wall there because, as we know,
they're
Australia,
trying to build the train tracks.
Australia is the test lab for the U.S.
Right.
So wait until, you know, that's a matter of time before you see a U.S. bank doing exactly the same thing, getting on to get headed to the stablecoin. A lot of people, a lot of very informed observers about crypto and about CBDC will tell you they're not going to go to the CBDC all at once. The stepping stone mm-hmm. is going to be a stablecoin.
Right. Right.
And then we get to the next story. Okay. Which is like, oh boy. These seven cryptocurrencies are ISO 222 compliant. Are they the future of payments? Okay. I'm just going to call this ISO 22. It's a standard for electronic data interchange among financial institutions. It covers financial information transferred among financial institutions, including payment transactions, trading information, settlement of securities, credit, and debit card transactions, and other financial information. So it's a lot of information packet. And then we get to this. FedNow. Yes, the Federal Reserve is preparing a new system whose main objective will be to meet market needs and help financial institutions transition to 24/7 by 365 operations. The feature will include, and look at this, it's widely accepted ISO 222 standard. Okay, so the FedNow is on board with the standard. So it's a standard to pay attention to. And then the article goes on. Okay. So it says there are seven officially sanctioned cryptocurrencies that are recognized as ISO 22 compliant. The one that should be of interest to subscribers,
yep.
I think,
Ripple.
Is Ripple. That's interesting. And there's any number of indications that Ripple is kind of where things are headed. But there's one in this article, and I found this really interesting. Fun fact. This is fun. Isn't this fun? Did you know that the person who signed almost every $100 bill, the former treasurer, Rosa Rios, now works at Ripple? Oh, you don't say.
So Ripple has been growing dramatically as in the wholesale systems for the banks.
Yep.
So I would love to, I should go check and I should look and see what Ripple is doing, you know, behind the scenes globally, transferring money around between the big banks.
Yeah. See what they're doing behind the scenes because, you know, you read more and more stories and it's like the inevitable ripple.
Right.
You know, it's there seemingly in every story about crypto, about CBDC.
So for years, I would get lobbied by Ripple. You know, Ripple's going to be the backbone of the CBDC system and Ripple's going to be the... And every time I'd go look at sort of see who, you know, where Ripple came from and where it came out of, I was like, no, I'm staying away from this. But then Lagarde started to push it very, very heavily. And it was right after that. I was in Denmark. I was in Copenhagen and discovered there'd been a huge brouhaha because there was a software firm in Denmark that apparently, I was told by my contacts there, had a contract from the U.S. Navy to figure out how to get a chip in your hand to work with Ripple.
Oh, my God. Well, yeah.
Okay, that's it for me and Ripple.
if La Madame Criminelle is pushing it, you know, Lagarde, it's coming. You know?
Apparently, there were big protests, and the company backed out. I don't know. Apparently, there's a bit of a squabble about it before I got there. So
great. Fantastic. Yeah. That makes me really happy.
Yeah. So
okay. Let's go to Farmageddon.
Okay.
And we'll start off with the first part of the second Daily Double. This is James. This is pronounced Rogowski.
Yep.
Final report of the International Health Regulations Review Committee. He's happy because he has been banging the drum for well over a month. I have been stating my concerns regarding following aspects of the proposed amendments to the IHR, and he's got his reasons. And I'm just going to go through a couple of them to maybe put a check on his enthusiasm. So one of the things is change from advisory to mandatory. He says, yeah, this is a real problem. You're changing the overall nature of the WHO from an advisory organization that merely makes recommendations to a governing body whose proclamations would be legally binding. So he's been banging the drum on all these things. And the point of this piece is, hey, you know, they seem to have heard what I'm saying, and they're backing off a lot of these things. So he says, you know, you see here, I must admit, I'm pleasantly surprised. Is it possible my prayers have been answered? And then he uses the example that I let off with there, the change from advisory to mandatory. And he focuses on this language from the Article 1 from the IHR. Let's leave it at that. The proposed amendments to these definitions could be understood as aiming to change the nature of these recommendations from non-binding to binding and giving a binding effect to WHO recommendations and requests as proposed in other articles. That change would require a fundamental reconsideration of the nature of recommendation and the process for their adoption and implementation. And that's where Rogowski's bold ital there.
Right, because what that means is you have to put it through a treaty process. You can't just say they're amendments to regulations.
Yeah, but there's no capitulation by the IHR here at all.
Right.
He's seeing a phantom. It's not there. They're just saying, oh, well, that would have to be a change. That's not saying anything. They're not disclaiming. They're not waiving any rights. They're not disclaiming any position
right.
there. Sorry, guy.
So here's what was interesting, because I don't know if you saw Malcolm Roberts came out with a video thinking that it was a huge success. And James is saying, no, it's not a huge success. You know, we still have to exit the WHO. Because if you,
right.
you know, these guys, it's clear that they ran into real trouble getting 190 plus countries to agree to basically a psychopathic plan. So, you know, somehow somebody sort of eroded or pushed them back. They ran into plenty of friction and they didn't get everywhere they wanted to go. You know, but we're still staring down something that is absolutely unacceptable and has to be stopped. So
they're not backing off.
Right. They're not backing off an inch.
Right.
You know, but they didn't get the punch through they wanted, but they're not backing off. And if we don't stop them, they're going to get the punch through.
They're spinning.
Right.
What's at stake here? That's all they're doing. They're not saying, oh, well, we're going to let go of that one. You know, you guys, you're right. You know. I don't see that at all.
I would have loved to have heard some of the discussions, though. And the yeah, interesting thing right, is if you look right. at all the people they've fired and the new people they've brought in, you know, you could tell that their current complement of employees were not on board for genocide. So yep. they, you know, they've had to refresh.
Yep.
Yep.
Right. Yep. All right, let's keep it going to Farmageddon with our man Rappaport. This is really good. Two hidden reasons why they warp sped the COVID kill shop over the finish line into authorization. First reason is gaining authorization for the first RNA tech medical product in history. Now that they've laid the groundwork, they will now remake all traditional vaccines as RNA shots, which are much faster and easier and cheaper to produce. And they can claim to discover new viruses out into the future and quickly come up with RNA shots for them. And the second reason is the COVID shot is a nanoparticle product. That's what it's made of. They're extremely shot in this. They're extremely small. The shot is the first authorized medical nanoparticle product for the whole population. Many nanoparticle products will follow, and that gets into your your concern about the control grid.
Right.
Those nanoparticles get into you, and you can hook you right up to the control grid.
Right. And it's not just getting in you. It's getting in the livestock. It's getting in the food. It's getting, you know, it's getting in the air. So
yep.
we are looking, and Rappaport did a great job of describing this. We are looking at a tsunami of nanoparticles. I mean, this is the ultimate in environmental pollution. And yeah. everything from heavy metals to God knows what, because some of the structures that doctors are finding in people's blood in their bodies are so unusual and inexplicable. You know, they're trying to figure out what is this and why is it in our bodies? And what do we do to get it out? Right.
Right. Right.
Right. Right.
How do we get it out?
Right.
You know, and I don't know the answer to that. How do you get it out once it's in? Can you get it out?
Ulrich did two things for future science, medical nanobots, part one and part two, that are worth listening to. I'll tell you something funny. You know, I'll just tell you, I have a dear colleague and friend who believes you can't get them out at some point because there's, you know, it's so many and it's so much. So here's what she does. She has a ceremony that she puts everybody through where you announce, you ready for that? No, we're going to go into the woo-woo. Now's the time for, Jason Bond Smith used to call it super woo. He said, if the only thing you have is super woo, that's what you use.
Yeah.
So the super woo is she claps her hand and she says, all nanobots that will not serve the Christ, out. And then everyone that stays, she baptizes in the name of the Christ. And she basically says, we're going to turn the nanobots to work for us and against Mr. Global. So you convert the nanobots to your team.
I love it.
I will tell you, every time you do the ceremony, it makes you feel better. I can't tell you if it works, but.
Yeah, well, there's a lot to that. I mean,
I'm
not into it, but that there's a lot to that.
I used to have a friend who would meditate and try and send back to the cable, you know, energy that would blow up the satellite.
Yeah.
Right.
Spirituality is not a resource that you want to abandon these times. It's one you want to embrace.
The time I learned that spirituality worked, you know, because during the litigation, I tried prayer because I had nothing else. I couldn't call the police. I couldn't call the FBI. So I used prayer. And I discovered it really does work. It really does work. Right.
Yeah. If you follow, I've read some theologians on prayer. A lot of it is you're praying to find the God within you.
Right.
Just to let go of the externalities, let go of the external, the false idols in your life and find the true source of power. It's inside you.
Right.
That's the power.
Well, to a certain extent, you have to, because whether it's disinformation or nanobots, you know, the tsunami is upon us and you can't fight it.
Big time. Yeah.
But what you have to do is you have to stay in a state of amusement. So
you do. You do.
You need the nanobots to help.
And these days you need all the help you can get. You know, we're made in God's image. You know, we need all the help we can get because the powers that be don't like that. They want to change that. They want to put other things into you. It's not good.
Yep.
But let's turn to pushback to doing what we can to change the world. And we'll
There's
lead
some
off
great
with
pushback. Woof.
Well, I'm going to lead off with, you know, some self-interest pushback here.
Yeah,
Clown and the Gang's Apocalypse. This is a Substack entry I did. I have a video coming out, so I decided, you know, I'm going to do a Substack entry to sort of announce this video, and that's really what this is. Just a piece that sort of goes through an article that goes through a piece of the new video, which is the WEF and the WEF's tote board of risks that seem to be coming down the pike. And I sort
you
of
should,
make
can
a joke
you show
out of
the
it.
List that you put in the Substack?
Yeah.
You had a list of all the poly crisis.
Yeah, we talked about this last week.
Yeah, we did.
But here's the list. So they rank. This is the WEF's own list of risks over the next 2 years. Number one, cost of living crisis. Number two, natural disasters and extreme weather events. Three, geoeconomic confrontation, and so on. Okay,
right.
And so I said last week, and I say in the video, here's my bet for the one they're going to key in on next. Because remember, right before we had pandemic, before that whole mess was unfurled and that production began, we had a repo crisis in New York, and we had a drill run by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and Johns Hopkins in New York called Event 201, where they simulated a coronavirus pandemic. How about that? That was in October.
Well, if you look at that, with number one being cost of living, they know that that's the number one threat to keeping the official narrative going.
Yep.
And so that's the real threat for them. And the question is, can they engineer enough natural disasters or cyber attacks or other things to keep control?
Right. Now they've got them color coded. So the green, look how much green is on this tote board. You know, no, seriously, I mean, it's crazy.
Right.
You know, the red is the problems they created themselves. That's how they color coded that, although they wouldn't admit that.
Right.
The red's their problems. And the other things, these are sort of general concerns, but they're not really, you know, not I wouldn't call it crises so much. Anyway, they have the whole tote board here. And I go through and I say, I make my pitch, like, I lay out the background and I say, here's why I'm picking the eight horse. But this is all part leading up to a new video. And I want to show you the thumbnail of the new video, which will be out by the time this airs. But you and I had a discussion about, I think this is my best thumbnail ever. I put a lot of work into my thumbnails.
I love the Amarova. So this is close.
Well, let's show the subscriber the two thumbnails. This is the new thumbnail for the video, which is called Why is the Fed Provoking a Financial Crisis? And it shows Fed Chairman Jay Powell stabbing Jamie Dimon, head of JP Morgan, in the back. I think that's my best ever. But you say, no, that's not your best ever. It's really Omarova.
I love the Omarova. Because I think, you know, what happened
shoplifting was at TJ Maxx.
Well, yeah. but Pam and Ross Martins got the details on the shoplifting. You turned it into this video, but you described her, you named her Sticky Fingers.
Yeah.
And then our social media person put it out on social media, and it just went. It just went. It just went and went and went. And then suddenly there were a couple of senators, including Kennedy, who really went after her. And I really think the sticky finger, I think that combination topped off with Stinky Finger made a huge a contribution to getting her kicked out. I really do.
Well, there could have been a lot of reasons. The opposition to her in the Senate
was,
which was bipartisan.
Yeah,
That kind of did her in.
Yeah.
You know, she had Democrats like.
Kennedy did a great job of destroying her. That's Kennedy from Louisiana.
So did John Tester.
You know?
A lot of people did. They piled on, and they should have, because she was saying a lot of crazy things and didn't even seem aware of like the toxic nature of what she was saying.
Well, my favorite one was the Vanderbilt Law Review article where she said, the great thing about CBDC is the Fed can just freeze everybody's bank account if they're worried about inflation.
Yeah, she just deleted people's money. You got an inflation problem? Don't worry about your inflation. We just get rid of people's money.
Right.
Just cut your money supply in half. Yeah. No problem at all.
Right.
And the other thing she advocated was, let's let the New York Fed take the asset side of the balance sheet and invest in anything. Stocks, SPACs, whatever they want to invest in. Put that on the asset side. Like, are you totally deranged?
Yeah, she is.
Anyway.
Okay.
She is. But that's one we can chalk up. We can chalk up for the home team. That's a win. We won.
Yeah,
that
was a win. That was a big win.
She did not become head of the OCC. That is not the nation's chief bank regulator now. Widespread opposition. So it does
work. We have a different pickpocket.
We know. Let's keep it going with pushback. This next one from Corey Diggs. I love this. This is 30 more ways to die from a heart attack, according to experts and media. And this is just a succinct compendium of ways you might not have known you could die from a heart attack. And I'm just going to highlight my three favorites, personal favorites. Daylight savings time may increase the chance of heart disease and strokes. How about that? No explanation for why that wasn't ever the case before. This is another one. Being sarcastic puts you at greater risk of a heart attack. And my sentimental favorite down here, because I used to play video games as a kid, video games may trigger rare heart attacks in kids. You know, as a kid, I played a lot of video games, Pac-Man, uh-huh. You know, Dig Dug, Galaga, uh-huh. You know, all of them. I don't remember any kid ever having a gripper in the arcade, and I burned a lot of quarters. I never saw that. That's ridiculous to say that. You know, that what they're trying to get away with. Anything but the jab. It's not the mRNA poison in you. Nope.
Right.
Let's keep it going with the second half of the Daily Double from Rogowski. Worldwide call to take immediate and massive action. And to do this, I couldn't highlight this, but what I can do here is I can search on action. And when I do that, he gives your actions you can do. Action number one, get informed. But I like this because it's very specific things that you can do. Understand your rights. Right. Then he lays them out. You know, action number four, alert the alternative media. Action number five, send this email. He gives you specific emails. Dear public servant, here are the email. You know, and he goes through these things. Send this letter to Congress. I love this because it's so specific. Right. There's things, tangible things you can do right at
your
fingertips.
And we saw a group in Wyoming try and pass legislation that the CDC and the WHO could have no jurisdiction in Wyoming. It didn't get through, but there you have it.
Right. Right. We covered that last week.
Right.
That statute. Anyway, but a statute, we'll cover another one this week. Let's just get it right now. This statute, it's a bill like the last one. It's up for a vote in Missouri. Missouri Senate votes to end income taxes on gold and silver, hold monetary metals in reserve. Now, there's some issues with this proposal, but the main thing is you want 1% of state funds in gold and silver. This is the big one, though, eliminating all state income taxes on monetary metals. And the reason that's important is that if you now buy metal and it depreciates, you know, you got to report capital gains if you sell it, right? Right? The rest of it, though, the issue is on this one, number three, require the state to accept gold and silver coinage as payment for any debt, tax fee, or obligation. That sounds good, but that's actually already the law.
Right.
Gold and silver coins are legal tender, but not in a way you might think. They're legal tender at face value.
Right. That's the problem.
That's the problem.
But there's no doubt stripping off the taxes makes it much easier for them to be used as a currency if you need to.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a big one.
That's a very right. big one. Right.
That's kind of a sticking point, and that's a good one. So hopefully that passes.
Right.
I think it got through the Senate and it's in the House. Anyway, it's got to get through the second chamber.
If you go to our homepage, we have something called the Silver and Gold Payment Calculator. And it's basically designed in a local area if you want to do a currency on a just-do-it basis. You know, because the hardest part about trying to do a community currency is creating an organization, doing bylaws, except, you know, creating the rules. The easiest thing is if you just do it. You know, you don't need an organization. Yeah. You don't need rules. And one way to do it is just start using your gold and silver. There you go.
Right. There you go. Right. Okay. Next story in pushback. This is another tight compendium. I love this. IPCC, Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, dissension in the ranks. 46 statements by IPCC experts against the IPCC. And they list them here, and it's clickable links. You know, you can click these, all these different experts saying things like no significant acceleration in the rate of sea level rise during the 20th century has been detected. So this is one you want to keep in your hip pocket for people to say, oh, no, global warming, this,
the
global warming, that.
The science is settled. The science is settled.
The science is. Anytime you see the science is settled, you're being sold a bill of goods. Ridiculous. Right. You're talking to somebody who doesn't know what science is.
Right.
No such thing as settled science. Science is about the one dissenting voice that proves the 500 person consensus wrong.
Right.
That's what science is.
My continual feedback is that climate change just isn't going the way they'd hoped. It's just not going.
Right.
And this is a perfect example of why it won't.
Yeah. The perfect example. But I want to go to our last item of pushback, and it's a video, and I wanted to change the volume because it was a little quiet. This is Nancy Mace, a clip, Representative Nancy Mace, Republican from South Carolina, talking about the vaccination. I found this clip very interesting. She's going after some Twitter executives, but listen to the whole her whole kind of piece here. It's very interesting. Okay.
Side effects from the vaccine. It wasn't the first shot, but it was the second shot that I now developed asthma that has never gone away since I had the second shot. I have tremors in my left hand, and I have the occasional heart pain that no doctor can explain, and I've had a battery of tests. I find it extremely alarming Twitter's unfettered censorship spread into medical fields and affected millions of Americans by suppressing expert opinions from doctors and censoring those who disagree with the CDC. I have great regrets about getting the shot because of the health issues that I now have that I don't think are ever going to go away. And I know that I'm not the only American who has those kinds of concerns. Another example of what Twitter has done to censor folks is from Dr. Martin Kulldorff, a Harvard-educated epidemiologist who once tweeted, COVID vaccines are important for high-risk people and their caretakers. Those with prior natural infection do not need it, nor children. The Twitter files reveal this tweet was deemed false information because it ran contrary to the CDC. So my first question this morning of Ms. Gaddy, may I ask of you, where did you go to medical school?
I did not go to medical school.
I'm sorry?
I did not go to medical school.
That's what I thought. Why do you think you or anyone else at Twitter had the medical expertise to censor a doctor's expert opinion?
Our policies regarding COVID were designed to protect individuals. We were seeing...
You guys censored Harvard-educated doctors, Stanford-educated doctors, doctors that are educated in the best places in the world, and you silenced those voices.
Yeah, she lets her have it. But I like that because you hear her disclosure up front is I was hurt by vaccines.
Right.
And then the second part is like, you have no expertise at all. And you, the reason that whole piece works is the disclosure about the injury from the vaccine is tied to Gaddy and Twitter's suppression of information.
Right.
Like, you did this to me.
So I remember publishing the injection fraud in the first half of 2020. So the vaccinations didn't start till 2021, December 2020 and then 2021. So I know whenever it was that Nancy Mace got that second shot, if social media and the media had not suppressed the knowledge and the truth of what was known then, it is inconceivable to me that she would have taken that second shot.
Yeah.
It's inconceivable to me that she would have taken the first one. But if you had COVID, there was even no excuse even believing what the CDC said. So, but that is a perfect example of information suppression and censorship causing disability and death.
Absolutely.
And that
if it's happened to a member of Congress.
Right.
How widespread do you think this problem is?
Well, I think I told you, we ran this on Financial Rebellion. And the minute it started to run, both in Europe and the United States, the live stream went down and didn't start up again for the rest of the time.
I totally
so it
believe
never
that.
Ran until they ran the pre-record.
Yeah.
Back and forth. But if you look at the video we just showed, it's rocketing all over the internet.
Tell you something else. I'd rather see Mace in position to run for president than Nikki Haley. Are you kidding me?
Right, exactly.
That's a layup.
Right.
She's great.
Yeah, you know? She was great. And I watched more of the testimony, and I have to tell you, John, the faces of those Twitter executives, one of them who was head of Twitter Trust and Safety, his last name is Roth, he had to sell his home and leave San Francisco because of the attacks and threats he's getting. But what's going to happen is, because of this video and the testimony, you're going to have hundreds of thousands of families in America who will believe that somebody in their family was disabled or died and their family was bankrupted, and they will see, you know, they will know those faces. So if you're Roth, I don't think there's any place you can run or hide. They know your face. Gaddy's face is, you know, she's very unique in her looks.
Right.
She's memorable. She's a very memorable looking person.
Yep.
I mean, how are you going to be safe in America?
Back to Roth. I mean, if you're taking the heat in San Fran of all places, where are you going to go, guy? Colony off Mars? I mean, what are you going to move to Indiana? You're not going to be safe there, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to go through a period of accountability. And people, whether or not you believe we can hold people accountable in the court of law,
right,
they will be held accountable in the court of popular opinion.
That's
and the
why
court of
you
popular
have courts.
Opinion, right.
There's going to be justice, and you better have a monopoly on it when it comes.
Right.
Because
exactly.
You know, you better have it under control. Because
but if the courts won't do their job, you know what's going to happen.
Someone will. There's going to be a theme 1 week on money markets.
Right.
Where the theme this week is, the pitchforks and torches are here.
Right. Yeah. Now, it's funny, watching Gaddy and Roth, I don't think they yet understand what has happened to them.
No, I know.
I don't think they yet understand what they were a part of.
I think you're right.
Right.
It reminds me of Omarova's testimony, where the guy's like, do you see how dangerous that is? One person deciding what the fate of all these people, you're going to take down the oil and gas industry by yourself. And she's sitting there like, this is the Ivy League law professor in this testimony, sitting there like, oh, I don't really see the, no, what's the problem? It's like that's how all these people from the corporatocracy are the same.
Well,
like
because they've lived in a bubble that's financed with government money, and they have no connection to real fundamental productivity. None.
Yep, none.
That's why I've always said, you know, I would take someone from the heartland with an IQ of 103, a team of those people over 10 guys from Silicon Valley with an IQ of 150, because they are living in a bubble financed with government money and printed paper.
Right.
They really don't know. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Right.
All right.
If you're out there in bubble land, find some ground and stick your feet on it.
Yeah. There are more and more pins from your bubble, which is getting bigger and bigger.
Right.
The collision's coming between the pin and the bubble.
People are getting thrown overboard. So the Titanic is throwing people overboard every day.
Yeah.
So I'm about to talk ask Catherine about chat. Is it PGT?
I don't know.
But basically, if you look at the projections of how many people are going to get laid off as a result of AI over the next couple of years, it's going to be extraordinary.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
But we touched on that last week with just
we did.
The models, you know, but that's the tip of an iceberg.
Yep.
Okay. Let's get into charts. You ready? I love this.
I'm ready.
Chomping at the bit to get this first chart. What do we got here?
So actually there are more flying objects shot down over North America.
Yeah.
One of my favorite allies said when he saw this, he said, I wonder why they wanted to drop teams of military in those places. But, you know, I've tried to understand what this is about, and, none of this makes any sense.
It's a bird, it's a plane. Yeah.
Well, we've had research balloons flying over every place for a long, long time, and, you know, that's an old game.
Yeah. Not that you need the balloons when you got a trillion cell phones and
right.
computers.
So I have no idea what this whole story was about. But whatever it's about, it was not, you know, something else was going on. And it could have just been distraction.
Totally. That's what I think. There's a lot going on. You got Mace in there saying, you guys poisoned me by hiding information, Twitter.
Right.
Anyway, that's a good graphic from Statista. Okay, let's keep it going. Next chart. Where are you? Here we go.
So I just wanted to take a look. This TUR is the Turkey ETF, and this is 1 year. So we're looking at the Turkish ETF versus the S&P, VGK, and FXI. FXI is the Chinese large caps, and VGK is the European, and S&P is SPY is the S&P. So the S&P is down 6%. Europe's down 5% for the year. China's down 18.58%. At the peak, the Turkey ETF is up 80%+.
I find that astonishing because the price in the U.S. dollars?
Well, part of it is you're looking, there's a lot of oil and gas in there. But remember, Turkey is working with Russia to help, you know, work around the sanctions. So between oil and gas and playing ball with Russia and China, you know, Turkey is, and remember, Turkey's holding up Sweden and Finland going into NATO. So Turkey's playing a lot of different games. But Turkey, you know, from the earthquakes have contributed mightily to bringing the, you know, Turkey back down to ground. But take a look at the next chart. Take a look at the inflation in Turkey.
Okay, to be clear, this is the price of Turkey sold in U.S. dollars. Got it.
Right.
Right. Okay.
Right.
All right, so let's go to the next chart. Oh,
but wow. So this goes out to 2027, so it's, you know, it's irrelevant projections. But Turkey's inflation rate, while its stock market was headed up that high, hit over 80%. So inflation has been off the charts in Turkey.
Yeah, boy.
And my guess is the earthquakes had something to do about, you know, Turkey had just signed a new agreement with Hungary. It was playing ball with Russia in a variety of ways. Turkey was not playing ball with the syndicate. And of course, it's holding up Finland and the Scandinavian countries going into NATO.
Hmm. Yeah.
Wow. Anyway.
This country is no stranger to inflation. Look back here.
Turkey was making way too much money by playing, you know, by not playing ball.
Yeah.
It's my read. Right.
Yeah. Interesting. Very interesting chart. Okay.
And of course, Turkey is, you know, pipeline central. You've got massive numbers of pipelines going through Turkey. So it's very much part of the oil and gas story into Europe.
Yeah. The market is not expecting explosions over there.
Yep.
Here we go. 1 year FinViz. Again, orange juice on top.
And lumber on the bottom.
Lumber and VIX way down in the basement.
Yep.
Well, Hi-Ho Silver is Midland, you know.
Yeah, so silver but gold are flat or down.
Right.
Flat or down.
That's a big flat middle there, isn't it?
Right. You know, and I must say the silver and gold ratio continues to, you know, every time silver goes down, I say, oh, another great sale.
Yeah. Yep. I'm with you. Okay. There's one more FinViz, right? Let's see.
Yep.
Yeah, the year to date. Okay. Where did lumber go? Everything's pretty much the same. Orange juice is at the top. VIX is down at the bottom. Where did lumber go?
Where is lumber? It's back up at 5% positive.
You're right.
This chart is why Powell thinks his disinflation is working. You know, because once he started taking interest rates up, we saw the commodities boom, really the air go out of the commodities boom.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's take a look at this. It'll be interesting to keep our eye on this one. No adjustments here by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, though. Right. Okay.
Because this is the futures market.
Yeah, exactly. That's the futures market.
Right.
I think that's it in the way of charts.
Yep.
Anything to add on the charts before we get into?
No, just a couple things going on at Soleri. So the number one thing, you're coming out with a new video. It'll be up.
Yeah.
Oh, well, this, I'm asking prayers.
Yeah,
I'm asking prayers.
This. Yeah, this
Dr. Mark Skidmore at Michigan State University. He's been dealing with enormous pushback related to his unbelievable and excellent study that we talked about. But his campus, they had a campus shooting, and his daughter is a student on campus, so she was living on campus when this happened. So very frightening. Between the pushback on the study and a campus shooting, I just ask you keep Dr. Mark Skidmore and his family in your prayers.
Yeah. Boy, Lansing was not Lansing, Michigan, not that far away from where I was in Northeast Indiana.
Well, they immediately came out. Now, of course, they're pushing for gun control because, you know, if you look at the number one obstacle to the control grid right now, it's the fact that Americans are so well armed.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, happier times, though, happier topics is what we covered last week. This, Hero of the Week.
Oh, I love this guy.
Yeah, Djokovic.
So he's our hero. He won the Australian Championship, and I think this is his 10th or 11th time.
10th, yeah.
10th. His 10th, and he gave an incredible speech. At the bottom of this commentary is a video of his speech upon winning the Australian. And they wouldn't let him play last year because of the vaccination issues.
They wouldn't get injected.
The way he handled going back in and the way he handled sort of the stress of doing that, some of the issues that came up and then winning, and then the way he gave the speech, it's just an unbelievable demonstration of leadership and character. Very inspirational.
Yeah, very much so. And a class act, too. I got to repeat that. You know, he really conducted himself well. Did him and his family and his country proud, in my opinion. Okay, let's keep it going. Blast from the past.
So 2 years ago in the third quarter 2020, Nina Hein, our culture, she calls herself the culture scout, wrote a wonderful spread on the sort of how freedom is depicted in art. And part of it was the pictures of the biblical figure Gideon. And you see that tapestry and painting in the top of the commentary. Anyway, we decided to make that wrap up available to the public. And it's really wonderful. The artwork is beautiful. And, you know, it's just a celebration of freedom. And it's, you know, it's the kind of inspiration we can all use these days.
You said a mouthful there. Kind of inspiration we could all use. All right.
And then Anne Christensen is a trust officer who, working at various trust companies, decided, you know, people need somebody who really represents them. So she became basically a planner for trusts and estates and sort of family and legal issues. And she's the kind of, whenever anybody says to me, I want to redo my whole estate plan, or I want to redo my wills, or I want to move assets into a trust, when I was an investment advisor, I'd say, no, you can't see a lawyer. First, you have to go see Anne, because you have to think through the family and personal and people issues. But you need to do it with somebody who understands the law and sort of how all these things work. And she's great. And so Corey wanted to do one on estate planning and wills and trusts and asked me, you know, who is the best person? And I said, you know, we've had Anne on before, but go do it again. So off Corey went. And it's a really good interview.
That's good to know. I mean, you know, people die and that money, if you don't talk to somebody, it's really up for grabs. And if you look at, you know, how government's comported itself for the last 10 years, really, you know, there's a lot of private parties who are going to get their, you know, blood funnels into your family treasure in short order.
Thinking
you need
everything
an advocate,
through,
like you said.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So there are all these different issues and protecting your assets and taking care of your assets. I don't know. You know, I'm a great believer in planning.
Yeah.
We doubled up because we had the solution series, but we also doubled up with a interview called The Economy of the Energy Body with Ulrich Honecker. And Ulrich and I have spent a lot of time trying to understand what Mr. Global is trying to achieve with the CBDC system. And one of the things we realized is we have all these different lines to the control grid, sort of the telecommunications, surveillance, and mind control. Then we have the financial, then we have the covert operations. And if you look at how they're building out the control grid, they're integrating it into one system, and it's unbelievably amazing how much money they're going to make out of it if they get away with it. Now, as you know, I'm planning on them failing. But I finally came to the conclusion that Mr. Global's understanding of the electromagnetic nature of our body and how to manipulate it and manage it is one of Mr. Global's core competitive edges against the rest of us. And so Ulrich and I decided to do a follow-up to our control grid interview where we talk about this and we talk about, okay, how do we get back in the game? And part of it was I just finished reading Joe Dispenza's latest book, Being Supernatural. And he's the chiropractor who figured out how to heal himself by literally through meditation. It's an amazing story.
Right.
But he spent his career since then trying to unpack the science of how that works and how other people can do it and teaching people to do it in his events and workshops. And he's got thousands of case studies now. It's, you know, he's been doing this for a while. And it's an amazing body of work. And one of you, as somebody said to me, who I introduced to this about several months ago and has been doing the courses, he said, you know, this is how we kill the pharmaceutical industry, because we just all walk away because we don't need them anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't need them anymore. You don't need people in your life killing you. How about that? You know?
Can you possibly make it more succinct and clear, John? This is why we love you.
It's what a radical notion.
Yeah. Anyway, so I'm late in writing my book review of Dispenza, but I can't recommend this book enough. So to me, the secret is if we can sort of catch up with Mr. Global, there's an incredible opportunity to break free of the control grid and a lot of other stupid things. So
yeah.
I'm pretty excited about this interview.
Okay. All right. So catch the interview. Let's wrap it up, though, with a Valentine's Day cartoon from Jeremy. Sorry about that.
I was speaking at a rally in Amsterdam 2 weeks ago. And the one thing that hit a chord was I said, you know, why is anybody dating or having sex with anybody who's building the control grid? You know, just dump them, walk away. And, So I was talking to a group of people here about a campaign they're talking about doing, and the only thing they really loved was the sex angle. So I sent an email to Jeremy, who's down in South Africa, and I said, okay, you know, CBDC and sex, the Lysistrata strategy is on. You've got to encourage people to, you know, walk away from people who are building the control grid. So this is what he came up with.
That's good. That's funny. Yeah,
it is funny.
It is.
Anyway, so.
I like him. He's interviewed me a couple of times.
He's so cute because I'll email him and I say, Jeremy, the cartoon is late, and he will send me back the message from his utility on what hours during the day he will have electricity and what hours they shut down. Oh, it's horrible. So you're a cartoonist. You're in the middle of the creative. No way. Bam, they shut down your electricity. Oh, it's what's going on in South Africa is horrible.
That's awful.
Yeah, wow. But he's very talented and a lot of fun.
He is anyway. A talented guy. You can see that in that cartoons, you know. Yeah.
So tomorrow I'm headed to Switzerland for 5 days. We're going to be meeting and powwowing with lots of people. And then I come back, but we're not going to have money in markets next week. It's our
right,
week off.
And I've already got a pile of stories. I'm like, I have an inbox where I shunt the stories and I get to them to make the spreadsheet. And I looked this morning. I'm like, there's 2 weeks more of this? I'm not going to get through them all. I'm sorry. Or we're going to have a four-hour running markets.
We need two folders. One is stories. The other is distractions.
Yeah, right. We're going to need a new category. You know? Constantly having to adjust.
We can use Bizarro World. So Bizarro World is where I put a lot of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got that right. we already got a whiff of that this week. You know.
With which one?
the flying objects everywhere. It's a bird, it's a plane, right. It's a distraction.
Well, my favorite one is, you know, I don't know if you've ever dug in and tried to understand the whole Roswell story, but no. They keep trying to say it was, you know, after a certain period, they, I don't know how long, a couple days, they started trying to say it was a weather balloon. And if you see the machinations they have to go through to stuff the story into a weather balloon framework, it's hysterical.
But eventually you gotta look at it.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, I try to do this with crypto and it's not working. Cope.
Okay, John. Anyway. Well, have a great 2 weeks and I'll see you on Money and Markets in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I'll have a new bicycle then. I'll be able to report on that.
You're kidding.
No, I got a new bike. I was crossing the road the other day, a very busy traffic road. My chain falls off the bike as I'm crossing the road in traffic.
Oh, you're kidding.
I'm like, okay, now that's it. I've been thinking about a new bike. That was the moment. Like, yeah, I'm getting a new bike now.
No, so it's funny because Saturday I bought a new bike. It hasn't been delivered, but I bought a new bike on Saturday.
Mine's here today. I'm going to pick it up when we're done.
So I kept trying to find a place in the Netherlands where they had the same make of the one you got because I was so impressed with it. It's that brand is beautiful, but
it's a cool brand. It's a little wokey, but you know.
Well, that neighborhood is a little wokey, but it's a beautiful bike. Yeah. It's a beautiful
cool
bike.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I've ridden them and they're nice. Okay. I'll give you a report next time. All right. Okay.
Have a great one. Thanks, everyone. Thank you for joining us on the Solari Report.